What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, the NBA Finals have been very interesting so far. The San Antonio Spurs, they really know how to collapse. That's for damn sure. I mean, every game so far, they have had a double-digit lead to start the first half. And they go out of control in the first half, and it just kind of feels like they blow their wad in the first half, and then the second half appears, and they just cannot knock down a shot. So let's get in to what has been going on in the NBA Finals, beginning with Game 1. Shockingly, the New York Knicks were able to steal Game 1 in San Antonio, 105-95. It looked like San Antonio had pretty solid control of this game up until about the third quarter. And Brunson just took over in the second half like he normally does. And the thing about Brunson is he just gets that Mamba mentality, if you will, where he just knows he has to turn it on and be the dude. He knows that nobody else is going to make the shots. He knows even nobody else is going in and getting the rebounds. Nobody is going in the paint, and that's what he does. He knows that if his team's not knocking down the three-point shots, he needs to run down the paint, and that is just what Brunson did in this one. He had 30 points. Karl-Anthony Towns had 18 points and 12 rebounds, and OG Anunoby had 17 points. And down the stretch, the Knicks were dominating, and it just looked like, you know, the Spurs just kind of let it slip away in Game 1. Then Game 2, it was the same thing. They had a nice little lead to start the first half, and then the second half began, and then it was kind of like midway towards the third quarter, they start to fall apart, and the Knicks are able to hang on to this one, steal the second one in San Antonio, 105-104. Wemby did take the final shot and missed the final shot, so if that matters to you, that's a big deal, but to me, it's like, hey, at least he took the shot. I like to see when your big dude takes the shot, and if you miss it, then that's just what it is. But in this one, Karl-Anthony Towns had another dominating game, 21 points, 13 rebounds, 4 assists. Brunson had another dominating game, 20 points, 6 assists, and 5 rebounds. And then Bridges added in 20 points as well. Then Game 3, the Spurs were able to steal Game 3, get the win 115-111 in New York, which is what they really needed to do. And this one was pretty close for the most part. But Victor Wembanyama, he was able to take over in this one. He had 32 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 blocks, and 2 steals. Stephon Castle, 23 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists. So just an all-around solid game from the Spurs. They did not let up in this one. But the big let up that they had was in Game 4. At one point in this game, the Spurs were up 29 points. The entire first half was completely dominated by the Spurs. As a matter of fact, it was 12-2 to start the game, Spurs. And it looked like the entire first half, the Knicks didn't look like they were playing at all. I was literally staring at my screen like, are they aware that this is the NBA Finals that they're playing for? This is not just a regular season bullshit slump game. You need to step it up. Well, like I said, there's this dude Jalen Brunson on their team, and he just knows when to take over a game. And even when it looks like shit is out of sorts and that nothing's gonna happen, Brunson still keeps it moving. And that's what happened here. Is the Spurs went cold. They were not knocking down any of their shots. They were throwing up complete desperation threes, and I'm just watching. As we get to the third quarter, I want to say there's about 5 minutes left, and the Knicks are starting to make a comeback. I want to say the Knicks are down about 17 points at one point, and I'm looking at this, and I'm like, the Spurs are just running down the court and just chucking up threes. They're not even setting up a motherfucking play, and I'm like, and now they're ice cold. They're not knocking down the threes like they were in the first half, and now, the Knicks are slowly chipping away at this lead. It goes from like 17 points. Then it's like within 13. Then they're within 11. And then all of a sudden, it's like they're within 8 points. And I'm like, the Spurs are going to give this one up. So the Spurs were able to maintain this lead all the way through the fourth quarter till about 5 minutes left to go. And the Knicks were able to just knock down threes. They were able to just make the shots when they needed to. And then all of a sudden, they take the lead. And then the Spurs are able to get the lead back. But motherfucking De'Aaron Fox, and it's not just him, but it was on him on towards the end of the game here. He should have just taken the ball down the court and tried to force a foul and get to the free throw line. Instead, he gets down the court and just tosses up a motherfucking shot and loses the ball. And the Knicks are able to run down the court. And they're very lucky because they miss the shot, but they get the ball back. And so now they got to inbound. And the Knicks inbound. And Brunson misses the shot. But OG Anunoby runs down the middle untouched and gets the layup for the game-winning layup. Knicks win 107-106. Biggest NBA Finals comeback in history. In NBA Finals history. Nobody has ever come back down from 29, and the Knicks did it. Brunson, like I said, dude turned it on in the second half especially, but the fourth quarter as well. He had 36 points, 7 assists, and 5 rebounds, but the dude was OG Anunoby, 33 points. Gotta say, it's early still. The series is not over, but if the series were to be over, gotta say, OG Anunoby, to me, MVP right now. Brunson playing out of his mind, of course, and is definitely the reason why they are in reach every single game. But OG Anunoby has made some insane game-changing plays. And I mean, that game winner in game 4, that pretty much sealed it to me. So I kind of feel like Anunoby is the finals MVP, but it's probably going to end up going to Brunson. Because game 5, Saturday night in San Antonio, the Knicks are up 3-1 right now. So the Knicks could close this out in San Antonio. And I wouldn't be shocked if they do because, like I said, the Spurs have been able to get the lead, double-digit lead, every single game and blow it. And I'm not shocked by this because I did say this before the playoffs began. The reason why I didn't believe in the Spurs is because I felt like they needed to grow. This is all of their first time ever in the playoffs. This is Wemby's first time in the playoffs. This is Castle's first time in the playoffs. This is even their coach's first time in the playoffs. So this is all new to them, and I felt like they were going to run into a wall at some point, and here is their wall. So I just feel like not only have they blown a lead in every one of these games, but I don't know if you can come back from what happened to them in game 4. Being up 29 points and completely demolishing this team the first half of the game and then letting them back in, and then not only letting them back in, but to win the way that they did, I don't think the Spurs can come back from this one. As a matter of fact, I think the Knicks are going to win on Saturday night and close this one out on Saturday. So we'll see. We might still be talking NBA Finals on Monday's show, but I really won't be shocked if the New York Knicks win it all on Saturday. But we'll see how that goes. But what a crazy series. And, you know, it's just I'm not really surprised by what I'm seeing with the Spurs here. They are way too young, and this is what happens with a young team. They get going real quick in the first half, and then they blow their wad in the first half, and then they lose their footing in the second half, and they can't knock down the shots, and then they're just not setting up plays. I don't know what it is with today's NBA, because it's not just the Spurs, but the art of passing the ball and setting up a play is so lost in today's NBA and needs to be found again. Yes, I know sometimes it's boring to watch the ball be passed around 11 times, but guess what? That is how you set up a play. That's how you get time off of the clock. So I don't know what's going on, but y'all need to learn the art of passing, especially the Spurs, because they would at least be going home tied 2 rather than down 3-1, but They have not learned the art of passing the ball, and they need to learn it quick. All right, so that's the NBA Finals. Let's get into the week of baseball. It's been a very interesting week of baseball beginning on Monday between the New York Yankees and the Cleveland Guardians. This game went 10 innings. The Yankees walked away with a 7-5 win. Cody Bellinger had the game-winning single in this one. Paul Goldschmidt, he has been turning it on the last couple of weeks. He had a home run and three RBI in that game. And it was a back-and-forth game between them and the Guardians. It was just like almost every dude who came up to bat, he was changing the game at some point. And it wasn't shocking that it went into 10 innings. And then, of course, the Yankees were able to walk away with the win. Then on Monday, the Philadelphia Phillies took out the Toronto Blue Jays 5-2. Christopher Sanchez is continuing his dominating Cy Young award-winning type season, where he went 7 innings pitched and 10 strikeouts in this game. This was his fourth 10-strikeout game of the season. That's why he's one of the top leading Cy Young Award candidates at this point in the game. I mean, he has had, I don't think anybody's been dominating at pitching the way Sanchez has been dominating at pitching this season. Then also on Monday, the Milwaukee Brewers and the Sacramento A's, they've been playing a series in Vegas this week. And holy shit, they've been knocking the ball out of the park. It has been home run central. This game that they played on Monday went 12 innings. The final score ended up being 15-14 Milwaukee. Between both teams, they had 29 runs and 11 home runs. And the game winner was Bryce Turang, who's had an amazing season for the Milwaukee Brewers. He scored on a fielder's choice in this one, but it has been crazy to watch these two just knock it out of the park. It's mostly because where they're playing, I think, is a AAA or AA stadium. So it's a small ballpark. So, of course, you're going to be knocking it out of the park. But when you got 11 home runs between two teams, that's pretty crazy. Then on Tuesday, the Los Angeles Dodgers took down the Pittsburgh Pirates 12-3. But the big deal in this one was Freddie Freeman continues to build on his amazing career resume. He hit his 2,500 hit, and he is the only active player at 2,500 hits. So that's a big deal. I mean, he's already got an insane career resume, and this just adds to it. The funny thing is, on the total list of all-time hits leaders, he's at like 100, ranked at like 106. So he still has a way to go. I mean, 2,500 is a big deal. He went 2-for-4 and with one RBI in this game. And also Paul Skeens, he was the pitcher in this one and got blown up. This was probably, I believe it was his worst game of the season. So just not a good game from him. But I mean, it's to be expected when you play against the Dodgers. Then also on Tuesday, the Chicago White Sox got a win over the Atlanta Braves in the 10th inning, 6-5. Montgomery went 2-for-5 home run with a home run and three RBI. And Montgomery, this was his rookie debut. This was his first game he's ever played in his entire career. 2-for-5, like I said, he had the game-winning home run, and he is the fifth ever rookie with a walk-off home run in the history of baseball. So that says a lot. And the White Sox, man, they just are rolling. You thought they were going to, or at least I thought they were going to cool down when Murakami went on the injured list. And so far, the White Sox are in first place right now in their division. So who would have thought? Then also on Tuesday, like I said, this series between the A's and the Brewers has been out of control when it comes to the home runs. The A's got the win 7-5. And they actually had 5 home runs in that game. Then on Wednesday, the San Francisco Giants, I haven't been able to talk about my Giants much this season because they've been terrible. But they were playing the Washington Nationals on Wednesday. They were down 9-1. And I was like, oh God, this is just a terrible ass game. And then out of nowhere, they had a 5-run eighth inning and then a 5-run ninth inning to actually win the game in walk-off fashion 11-10. As a matter of fact, Eldridge had a walk-off grand slam in this one. And like I said, the Giants got the win 11-10 in a shocking state of affairs. Chapman actually went 4-for-5 with 2 home runs and 3 RBI as well. Chapman's really turned it on these last couple of weeks himself. But this was a very shocking win by the Giants because they just have not been able to get the run support. And they've just been a very mediocre team for the most part this year. Then this great series on Wednesday between the Pirates and the Dodgers. The Pirates got the win 9-8. Callahan, their rookie, He had 2 home runs, 4 RBI, and they blew up Shohei Ohtani in this one. He was pitching, and he was pulled immediately just because he was getting blown up in this one. But the Pirates and the Dodgers, they've been going back and forth all week, and the Pirates got the better of them on Wednesday. Then also on Wednesday, the Philadelphia Phillies took down the Toronto Blue Jays 7-4. Harper, Schwarber, and Bohm all had a home run in this one. But also on the opposite side of the field, Max Scherzer, he got his 3,500th career strikeout. So he's right there with Freeman, got his 2,500th hit. Scherzer had his 3,500th career strikeout. And, I mean, Scherzer, he's another dude where he's just continuing to add to the resume, build on his amazing career. And good for him, just another notch in his belt right there, because he has been a killer with the strikeouts his entire career. And then also on Wednesday, talking about the Chicago White Sox again, taking down the Atlanta Braves 2-1. And like I said, they are first in the American League Central. They got a great pitch. They got great pitching from their pitcher, Martin. He went 6 innings pitched in this one with 6 strikeouts. And then on Thursday, the Cubs, who have been reeling this last month, they got a win that they really needed over the Colorado Rockies, 9-3. Suzuki had a grand slam in this one with 4 RBI. And then Bregman, who's had just a very, very quiet season, he had a home run and 2 RBI in that one as well. So with Freddie Freeman, you know, becoming the only active player to hit 2,500 hits in his career, I decided this week my top five list is going to be the top five hitters. And what I mean by that is not just dudes who are knocking it out of the park. It's mostly, are you getting on base? Do you steal bases? And it doesn't, of course, home runs do matter. Home runs are a big friggin' deal because that's automatic runs immediately. But just getting on base is something that is absolutely necessary. And so these top five hitters right here, they, of course, are definitely in the top 10 of the all-time hitters. But these are all just straight-up hitters. It has nothing to do with home runs per se. Now, one of these guys, definitely a home run king. But the other guys, nah, not really about the home runs. 4 of the 5 are pretty much just dudes who used to get on base and are just did their job, basically. So let's start with number 5. I bet a lot of people would not put this guy at number 5, but he actually is in the top 10 for all-time hits. So number 5 on my top 5 hitters, Derek Jeter. Played with the New York Yankees from 1995 to 2014 at shortstop, of course. He is number 6 overall on the all-time hitters list with 3,465 hits. Yeah, Derek Jeter. 3,465 hits. I mean, he was amazing at the shortstop position. I mean, for the most part, when you look at Derek Jeter, you mostly think of the defensive plays that he made at shortstop. But when you take a look at the all-around career of Derek Jeter, this is a five-tool player. He has it all. He is great at everything that he does. Overall, his career, batting average, .310. Because all of these guys, by the way, that I'm going to talk about, they all hit over 300 as well for their career. Derek Jeter had 260 career home runs and 1,311 RBI. He is a 5-time champion. He is a World Series MVP. He was the Rookie of the Year. He is a 5-time Gold Glove Award winner, and he is also a 5-time Silver Slugger Award winner. That right there, all those statistics right there go to show you, not only was he fantastic at defense, but he was great offensively. He may not always hit a home run out of the park, but the dude is going to be on base. And that matters just as much as hitting a home run out of the park. Then at number 4 on my top 5 hitters, Stan Musial. Played with the St. Louis Cardinals from 1941 to 1963 at the outfielder position and first base. He is number 4 overall on the all-time hits leaders list with 3,630 hits. Career batting average of .331, 475 home runs, and 1,951 RBI. He is a 3-time champion, 3-time MVP, 7-time batting champion, and 2-time RBI leader. So, I mean, the batting champion, the 7 times, that alone, that tells you the dude was money when he would come out to hit. And then, of course, just being an MVP, That alone is another reason why to put you on here. But number four overall on the hits, over 3,500 hits. That's a big deal. Stan Musial, one of the greatest of all time, Hall of Fame player. As a matter of fact, all of these guys are Hall of Fame except for the next guy, and we all know why he's not there. It has nothing to do with what he did on the field. But number three on my top five hitters list, Pete Rose. I know you could argue with him being number one because he is the number one overall hits leader, but I gotta say, number one and two, overall, their statistics really do beat him out in every single way, shape, and form. But Pete Rose, one of the greatest hitters of all time, hands down. Played with the Cincinnati Reds, the Philadelphia Phillies, and the Montreal Expos from 1963 to 1986. Outfielder, of course. He is the number one overall all-time hits leader. 4,256 hits. So, yes, over 4,000 hits. Crazy stat right there. Career batting average of a .303, 160 home runs, and 1,314 RBI. He is a three-time World Series champion. He won the MVP. He won a World Series MVP. He won Rookie of the Year. He is a two-time Gold Glove Award winner. He is a one-time Silver Slug Award winner and three-time batting champion as well. Like I said, I could have easily put him at number one, and I was really close to putting him at number one. But then when I looked at the overall stats of these next two guys that I'm going to talk about, I really could not justify putting Pete Rose above those two, even though you could because he's the all-time hits leader. But my number two top five hitter is Hank Aaron. Played with the Milwaukee Atlanta Braves from 1954 to 1976 at right field. He is the number three overall all-time hits leader with 3,771 hits. Career batting average of .305. Career home runs of 755. And career RBI of 2,297. He's a one-time World Series champion. He's a one-time MVP, three-time Gold Glove Award winner, two-time batting champion, four-time home run leader, which is crazy because he used to be the all-time home runs leader for a long-ass time, and he only led the league in home runs four times, which is crazy. Four-time RBI leader, and then, of course, he holds MLB records in most career RBI, 2,297. Most career total bases, 6,856. And most career extra on base hits, 1,477. And it's statistics like those that I just rattled off that are really why I put him above Pete Rose, because I was like, man, Pete Rose's career RBI, 1,314. Hank Aaron, 2,297. I mean, that's double. And then the home runs, it's not even a comparison. So 160 to 755, come on. So to me, and then, I mean, when you look at the hits, 4,256 for Rose, 3,771 for Henry Aaron. I mean, it's not that far. And to me, Hank Aaron is just one of the hands down greatest baseball players just of all time. So if we're talking hitter, that's pretty much it. But number one is somebody who none of us have watched. I mean, if there is somebody still alive who has watched this dude, wow, that's pretty crazy. But it's Ty Cobb at number one on my top five hitters. And that's just because when you look at his statistics, it is nuts. I mean, nuts. His career batting average, it changed it all for me, really. Because I'm like looking at all his stats and I'm like, I was going to put him behind Pete Rose. And then I'm like, no, I cannot put him behind Pete Rose. And then I was like, I'm going to put him behind Hank Aaron. I'm like, no. This guy is the king of getting on base. That's all there is to it. And that's Ty Cobb. He played with the Detroit Tigers from 1905 to 1926. So if you saw Ty Cobb play, wow. Wow, and you're still alive. I mean, that was 100 years ago when Ty Cobb retired at center field. Number two overall on the all-time hits list at 4,189. He is still on the all-time hits list, and he retired 100 years ago, okay? His career batting average, .366. I repeat, .366. Derek Jeter's .310. Stan Musial, the closest one out of these guys in the pack, at 331. Hank Aaron, paltry 305. And Pete Rose, a shitty 303 compared to Ty Cobb's career batting average of 366. That alone tells you how much this guy was on base. 117 home runs, 1,944 RBI, and 897 stolen bases. He won an MVP, he won the Triple Crown, and here is another stat that put him above all of these guys on this list. As a matter of fact, yeah, he's got more batting champions than every guy on this list combined. He led the league in batting average 12 times. 12 motherfucking times. Led the league in home runs once, and is a four-time RBI leader and a six-time stolen base leader. Nobody got on base more than Ty Cobb. He was the king at getting on base. You know, like I said, this did not matter about home runs. This is not a home run hitting list. This is just getting on base. And then when you get on base and you do all the little things like stolen bases like Ty Cobb did, man. But to still be at number two overall on this list, with hits, 4,189. And I mean, Pete Rose is barely above him. 4,256, 4,189. That's not a big disparity right there. But Ty Cobb was just meant to get on base. And when I looked at his stats and that 366 batting average, I just looked at that. And I'm like, that's just the epitome of a dude who's hitting the ball right and getting on base and doing his job. And how crazy is it that I'm talking about Ty Cobb 100 years later? That is nuts. But you look at that dude's stats, he's the greatest hitter of all time. Hands fucking down. All right, y'all. Enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.